Hello there, and welcome to episode number 133 of Blue Jays World Update. I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and let's get you up to date. All right, so we are back. We're less than a week away from the start of the highly anticipated winter meetings, which get underway on Monday of next week. And the biggest news, of course, or at least the biggest discussion topic, is without a doubt, where will Shohei Ohtani sign? And of course, for Blue Jays fans, there's a ton of buzz surrounding whether or not Ohtani will actually sign north of the border. So we got that to discuss. We got some very juicy trade rumors to lay out as well, involving Juan Soto and Alex Bregman, maybe even a Milwaukee Brewer or two, and some other things that are certainly are worth our time debating and discussing. So let's dive right in and start with Ohtani. Now look, the anticipation, or at least the latest rumblings in the ether so far, is that Ohtani could very well sign even before the winter meetings start on Monday. So if you're listening to this a few days after the episode gets published, Ohtani may have already signed, and this may just be a moot point for you, and feel free to fast forward if that indeed does happen. But my gut, I don't have any inside information here, like many others, because Ohtani's camp is so tight-lipped that really only he and his representatives know where he's going to sign. So any rumor you hear about Ohtani right now, you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt because of where it's coming from. It's largely just speculation because of the nature of how Ohtani wants to handle his free agency. So we'll see whether or not when he signs. But my personal belief is that he's going to sign with the Los Angeles Dodgers. I've thought that this entire time, and that's not a hot take. The Dodgers are considered the favorite for Ohtani for many reasons. And I have a hard time seeing him sign anywhere else. And I know that's going to sound disappointing for Blue Jays fans out there. But personally, I just think it makes too much sense for Ohtani not to end up with the Dodgers. You know, like, first you have all the advantages of staying in the Los Angeles area for Ohtani, right? Like, he's spent all of his career so far, at least all of his career in North America, in Los Angeles, albeit Anaheim, but still, he knows the area. He likes being on the West Coast, and it's going to be very difficult for any team, not just the Blue Jays, to entice him to come to the East Coast, or even the Central, where the Cubs are, or down south in Texas, who, you know, seems like they're going to be out being big spenders again, coming off their World Series victory. So, you know, it's going to be tough for teams like the Blue Jays, and, you know, whether the Yankees or the Mets have any sort of shot, or the Red Sox. You know, but you also have the fact that the Dodgers have carte blanche in terms of financial resources that they can utilize to lure Ohtani to their organization, right? Like, you go back a few years ago, actually two off seasons ago, the Dodgers let Corey Seager walk out the door and sign with the Rangers. And then last winter, they let Trey Turner also walk out the door. I don't know if either of those players would have had any sort of significant impact in preventing the Dodgers from getting bounced this past postseason, but I'm sure those weren't easy decisions, and I'm sure they were also calculated ones too, knowing the fact that had the Dodgers committed lucrative deals or a lucrative deal to either Seager or Turner, it would hinder their ability to have the resources available to land Ohtani. So, I don't know. Like, I'm all for the crazed hype that has emerged around the winter of Shohei. It's fun. Like, I, you know, as a fan of baseball, I love every bit of it. However, you also have to be a little rational as well. As boring as that can be, sometimes you have to look at things through an unbiased opinion. And in doing that, I have a hard time seeing Ohtani not signing anywhere other than with the Dodgers. So, you know, there are obviously a ton of points the Blue Jays can make to try and convince Ohtani that, you know, Toronto is the place for him, right? You know, obviously, like, when you start breaking down the potential angles the Blue Jays can come at him with, you know, like, the money is kind of, like, irrelevant in the sense where, like, it's already pre-dictated as to, like, what Ohtani's going to get. Like, there's already that assumption that he's going to sign a record-breaking deal, right? That's a given. So, you know, it's not, you know, deciding who's going to give him the biggest offer, right? Especially because from the few reports, or at least legitimate reports that we've heard, it's that money is not the main driver for Ohtani in free agency. And that's probably because, again, like, he knows he's going to get paid. Like, that's like a side point for him. His main priority, of course, is joining a franchise where he's going to have the best opportunity to win a championship, right? Like, he didn't go to the postseason at all with the Angels. You know, like, that's clearly something that means a lot to him, and rightly so, right? Everyone wants to be in the playoffs every season and have, you know, repeated chances of making a run at a World Series. And joining the Dodgers would undoubtedly give Ohtani a really good shot at that. You know, they're an organization that has continued to show that they're fully in on putting a team together that's competitive and a championship caliber roster. So they have that going for themselves. But, like, so do the Blue Jays too, right? They don't have the playoff success that a team like the Dodgers does, right? The Dodgers won the World Series in 2020. They have countless division titles in their possession, largely because the NL West has been a bit of a tire fire over the last, you know, half decade, while the Giants and Diamondbacks go through their respective rebuilds and whatever the hell the Rockies are doing, and the Padres fumbling things like they continuously do. So it's kind of just been the Dodgers and everyone else the last, like, 5-7 years. But when you look at a team like the Blue Jays, sure, there's the downside of entering the toughest division in baseball. But this is a team that has repeatedly shown that it wants to do everything in its power to put together a winning roster. You know, you look at what the front office has done over the last 3-4 years in constructing this group, where, you know, it all started in 2019 with signing Hyunjin Ryu to that 4-year, $80 million contract, which has now expired. But you look at even last year, right? They put the chips in the middle of the table. They traded their best prospect in Gabriel Moreno, along with an expiring outfielder in Lourdes Gurriel Jr. for Dalton Varsho. And sure, like, first year in Toronto didn't go well for Varsho. By any, you know, aside from his defense and his other intangibles, offensively, it was a disaster. But there was that indication that the Blue Jays were serious about winning. You look at the Chris Bassett signing. You look at the moves they made the previous offseason, signing Kevin Gausman to his lucrative deal in free agency, extending Jose Berríos to his 7-year lucrative contract. You know, the only thing that Jays really haven't done yet is extending their young core players like Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or Jordan Romano or even Danny Jansen, who's eligible to enter free agency after next season. That's, you know, the one thing they've yet to do. But at the same time, that's that they can also use that to their benefit, because that provides the organization with financial flexibility long term, which is something they would need to sign somebody like Shohei Ohtani to a, you know, whether it's a 10-year, $500 million contract or whatever he ends up getting. You know, it'd be harder to do that if you also had monster deals on the books for Bo and Vladdy. And speaking of those two, that's another point the Blue Jays can make to Ohtani's camp, is that here's something you'll get to do for at least the next 2 seasons. Be in the same top four, or even the top three, however the Blue Jays would end up constructing their lineup. Ohtani could easily be smack dab in the middle, hitting between Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Like, how tantalizing would that be? Right? Two of the better young hitters in baseball, despite Vladdy's, you know, recent disappointments over the last few years. The potential that Vladdy has would be enough to grab Ohtani's attention and be like, oof. And even George Springer, right? Like, maybe you don't have Springer in the leadoff spot, but you could have him as part of that top four of the order with Ohtani, Bichette, and Vlad. It's a pretty potent group, assuming, you know, two of that four in Springer and Guerrero play up to their expectations offensively. And also, too, you got to think about the fact that Toronto as a city is one of the most diverse populations, cultures, and all of the world, right? And for somebody like Ohtani, who, you know, is coming from a country like Japan, it wouldn't feel exactly like home in Toronto, but I'm sure it would feel very similar in just the type of people he would interact with, and you know, the types of food that would be available to him, and you know, I think that would definitely be a leverage point that the Blue Jays could use. And also, too, and I think there's a really big one as well, is the fact that the Blue Jays are Canada's team. You know, like, you won't get that anywhere else. And especially, too, if Ohtani ends up with the Dodgers, sure, he would garner waves of attention. But so would Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and even Clayton Kershaw if he doesn't retire and extends his stay with the Dodgers organization. You know, and sure, the Blue Jays have a similar, you know, complex with the fact that Bichette and Guerrero are already faces of the franchise. But like, you add Ohtani and this team would blow up. Like, it would explode. Merchandise sales would go up. Ticket sales would explode. The endorsements that Ohtani would receive, not just in a single city, but in an entire country. You know, like, that's pretty significant. Or at least I think it's pretty significant. So, you know, for anyone who scoffs at the idea of the Blue Jays being a serious contender for Ohtani, kind of needs to reevaluate where this franchise is at and how it's actually positioned and well positioned to make a legitimate offer to Ohtani that, you know, even though, again, like, it's very likely he ends up with the Dodgers, the gap between where the Dodgers are and everyone else might not be as considerable as it may have been, you know, several months ago. So that's all. You know, obviously Ohtani's going to dominate headlines until he signs somewhere, right? That's just the nature of his brand, right? It's just so overwhelming that until he does sign somewhere, that's all anyone really is going to talk about, right? Like, you have Juan Soto's name being circulated in trade rumors, but all of that seems secondary to Ohtani, which is kind of crazy because, like, Soto is a franchise-altering player too, but it's just he doesn't pitch, right? And he doesn't have the superstar fandom. Well, like, he does, but, like, not at the same level as Ohtani, which is just, it's a little mind-blowing because of how great and phenomenal Soto is, but it's just, like, he's not dominating the news cycle like Ohtani is. It's kind of crazy, but also, a year from now, Soto probably will, if he's still, you know, not signed to a long-term contract. And that brings me to the next point here, and whether or not the Blue Jays should actually make a run at Soto. And of course, you know, I don't think they can seriously look at executing that type of move until they know where they stand with Ohtani. Which is why, like, the sooner Ohtani signs, the better. So that he, you know, he doesn't hold up the rest of the offseason more than he kind of already has, at least in terms of the bigger names available. But a player like Juan Soto, even though he's only 1 year away from free agency, he would dramatically transform this Blue Jays roster. And, you know, the fact that he's potentially a rental is scary, but according to Ross Atkins, it's not something the Blue Jays would be put off by and completely you know, eliminate from consideration, you know. So that's without a doubt a step in the right direction already. The fact that the Blue Jays would and probably have already considered trading for Juan Soto. And even if he was only with the Blue Jays for one season, and sure, that would be a less than desirable outcome, it undoubtedly helped maximize their current competitive window and give them a great shot of winning a World Series next year. Because, you know, you look at Juan Soto's resume, and, you know, sure, he's not a great defender, right? Like, he'd be a significant step back from the outfield trio you had defensively of Varsho, Kiermaier, and Springer last year. But I don't really even care if he's just replacement level in left field. The fact that, or what he would give you offensively, would make up for all of that. You know, you look at what he did last season with the Padres, and it was kind of overshadowed by the fact that the Padres disappointed so much. But, you know, Soto played all 162 games. He hit 35 home runs, drove in 109, which is one shy of a career high. Those 35 home runs were a career high. He slashed 275, 410, 519 with a 395 WOBA and a 155 WRC plus. All of that, he was worth 5.5 wins per Fangraphs, or wins above replacement per Fangraphs. And he's just, like, it's hard to imagine, or it's hard to comprehend, but, like, Soto's just 25 years old. He turned 25 last month. You know, like, this guy is just entering the prime of his career. And he's going to get absolutely paid because he's that young and only 1 year away from free agency. Like, he's going to be looking at, you know, whether it's a 10-year or even longer type deal at, you know, you got to think starting at $30 million per season. And, you know, of course, like, if the Blue Jays are willing to commit a $500 million contract to Shohei Ohtani, they absolutely should be open to inking a $300 million plus deal with Juan Soto, who would absolutely help augment the core of Bichette and Guerrero. And, you know, if even, you know, I question as to what that would do for the Blue Jays' ability to keep both Bo and Vladdy, and that'd be a big part of the conversation in trading for Soto. But I think that's more of a long-term conversation, and obviously the Blue Jays have to keep that long-term outlook in their peripheral vision. But having 1 year, just 1 year of Juan Soto with the pitching that the Blue Jays have already, it's just, it'd be risky. It'd be incredibly risky, especially considering what you'd probably have to give up for Juan Soto. Like, we're probably talking, and the Padres are undoubtedly looking for pitching, but, like, if you're the Blue Jays, you're not giving up Ricky Tiedemann for potentially 1 year of Juan Soto. Like, to me, that'd be a non-starter. I don't really think Tiedemann should be available, period, in any sort of trade negotiations, because it doesn't make sense for the Blue Jays to really trade him whatsoever, regardless of the offer. So, you know, would the Padres be open to a package centered around Aurelvis Martinez, Addison Barger, Nate Pearson? You know, like, the Padres gave up a massive haul when they acquired Juan Soto in 2022. But, like, at the time, he had 2.5 years of team control remaining. Now he only has one. So that price absolutely will drop considerably. But San Diego's still going to expect a significant haul in return, and as they should. You know, Juan Soto's one of the best players in baseball. You know, they're not just going to give him away freely, especially considering what that would do to their franchise for the 2024 season and beyond. So, I don't know. I think if the Padres were open to that type of return, minus Ricky Tiedemann, if I'm the Blue Jays, if ownership is open to committing that type of contract to Soto, which I think they would be, I'd pull the trigger. I would do it in a heartbeat. I would drive those players to San Diego myself. So, you know, we'll see whether or not if Soto gets traded, but whenever the Ohtani situation wraps up, if he doesn't end up with the Blue Jays, I'd expect Toronto to be fully involved in the Juan Soto trade negotiations. And I think as well, they at least have to do their due diligence on somebody like Alex Bregman, who probably isn't available, but similar to the Juan Soto situation, like, if the Astros aren't able to extend him beyond next season, which it doesn't sound like they will be, you have to at least entertain the possibility of trading Bregman rather than letting him walk out the door for nothing other than draft compensation. And, you know, for the Blue Jays, they have an obvious need at third base, right, with Matt Chapman entering free agency and very possibly may not end up returning to the team next season. And, you know, I did a full breakdown on, you know, how Bregman would improve the Blue Jays and key components that their front office would have to consider and what type of return the Astros may command pretty lengthy feature over at Yahoo Sports. If any of you are curious as to reading further into that topic, but you know, Bregman would not be much of a step back, if any, from Matt Chapman in 2024. And again, there'd be the obvious risk of giving up a massive return for a guy who could just leave in free agency after next season. But offensively, the potential that Bregman would give you over somebody like Chapman would be considerably higher. Maybe not in the power department per se, but Bregman, who's a tremendously good hitter when it comes to generating contact and being disciplined at the plate, he would undoubtedly help the Blue Jays in both of those categories. I'm very skeptical as to whether or not his power would translate positively over to Toronto, considering that he does play in a very hitter-friendly ballpark in Houston with those Crawford boxes beyond left field. But considering the alternatives that are available, especially in free agency, I would much rather target a guy like Bregman over somebody like Candelario or any of the other options in free agency or via trade. There's not a lot out there, which is part of the reason, or it's a big reason as to why Bregman's name is even out there to begin with. And I have a hard time seeing the Astros trading him to begin with, just because, you know, they're in a situation where they still are in their competitive window, right? They're not ready to reset the roster yet. So why would it make sense for them to trade away one of their biggest bats in Bregman? You know, it wouldn't really align with Houston's MO in that regard. But again, if you're the Blue Jays, you absolutely have to explore that avenue if Matt Chapman ultimately doesn't return. And it's still possible that Chapman could, obviously, right? He's still available in free agency, but, you know, given the fact that he's by far the top third baseman available in free agency, and the fact that he's already reportedly turned down an offer from the Blue Jays, I have a hard time seeing Matt Chapman being back with the Blue Jays in 2024, especially when you consider the fact that teams like the San Francisco Giants are highly motivated to land a marquee free agent, and you also have the prior relationship Chapman has with the Giants manager and Bob Melvin. And he also has prior ties to the Giants president of baseball ops and Farhan Zaidi. So, you know, like that, the Giants are a serious threat for Chapman, and I think the Chicago Cubs are too. They're looking to upgrade their third base position, and you know, they're a team that reportedly has already inquired about Bo Bichette and, you know, whether or not they would move him to third base, but that remains to be seen. It would make sense considering they already have Dansby Swanson at short and Nico Hoerner at second. Moving Bo Bichette to third base really doesn't make a ton of sense for me personally, but that would be their call. And you know, like what's been reported already is that the Blue Jays aren't actively interested in trading Bo or Vladdy this winter, at least. So, you know, that really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But when it comes to third base for the Cubs, like, Chapman would make a ton of sense. The Cubs are looking to spend more money this winter. They already made Craig Counsell the highest paid manager in the history of the sport. So they're clearly motivated and have the resources available to them to be big players in free agency this winter. So, you know, as much as I adore Matt Chapman's defense, and I believe he can be better than what he showed in 5 of the 6 months offensively last year, it's going to be tough to bring him back. Which is why the Blue Jays have to explore alternatives like Bregman. And I think, too, this, what I'm about to get into, is a topic that probably needs to be discussed a little bit more. But again, it hasn't, probably because of the Shohei Ohtani sweepstakes. And that's, the Blue Jays are in a very rare position financially compared to some of the other teams in baseball, where, it's going to get a little technical, so don't try, you know, I'll try and stay with me here. But the Blue Jays are owned by Rogers Communications, right? We know that. That's the easy part. Rogers also owns Sportsnet, which is the primary, is the TV broadcaster, radio broadcaster of the Blue Jays. So they don't have to worry about uncertainty. The Blue Jays, that is. They don't have to worry about uncertainty regarding their TV contracts. Or TV contract. But teams south of the border aren't so lucky because of what's going on with Bally Sports, which is a regional TV broadcaster for several different teams in the States. And because Diamond Sports Group, which owns Bally Sports, filed for bankruptcy several months ago, there's been this whole issue of several teams either getting dropped, which happened this past season, by Bally Sports and not receiving any more funding from them as part of their TV contracts, or heading into next season not knowing if that will happen to them. So teams like the Cleveland Guardians, the Milwaukee Brewers, the Minnesota Twins, they're all in the same boat where they could very easily be out of a regional TV deal next season. And that would be a significant loss of revenue for their teams. And because of that, those franchises have to shed payroll this winter. And we've already seen a little bit with the Minnesota Twins not being able to retain Sonny Gray, and rumors that, you know, they'll be looking to trade Christian Vasquez and maybe even Max Kepler as they look to continue to shed salary in hopes of being able to pay their bills in 2024. And, you know, it's a similar dilemma that a team like the Milwaukee Brewers are in, which leads me to the fact that the Blue Jays, because of their unique position, they should be able to take advantage. And it may sound mean and harsh, but that's the reality here, is that the Blue Jays can come in and sort of flex their financial muscles, or Rogers' financial muscles, and say, look, we can very easily help you out of this pickle here, and we could take on your contracts, your high price contracts that you can no longer afford, and we'll take them off your hands. And by doing that, the Blue Jays would be helping out those teams, and because of that, they wouldn't have to give up the type of return they would typically have to surrender for players of the caliber that they'd be interested in. Like, if we were to look at the Milwaukee Brewers, somebody like Willy Adames, who is a free agent after next season. And undoubtedly, the Brewers probably won't be able to retain him. So for a team like Toronto, who could very well benefit from acquiring a player like Adames, who traditionally is a shortstop, but could move over to second base where the Blue Jays have an opening with Whit Merrifield becoming a free agent. And, you know, Willy Adames is a really good defender. He registered +8 defensive runs saved, +16 outs above average last season at short. And he would, you know, aside from his woes offensively in 2023, where, you know, he was a below average run producer per WRC plus with his score of 94. He still blasted 24 home runs, but he hit 31 in 2022 with a 220 isolated power, a 458 slugging percentage, and a 109 WRC plus. But because of that defense, he was worth 4.5 wins above replacement in 2022, over 139 games with the Brewers. So again, it would be acquiring a potential rental, but given the fact he only has 1 year left on his contract, where the Brewers are at financially, could be a relatively inexpensive acquisition for the Blue Jays that, you know, is a team that really needs to pack a little bit more punch. And Adames, even though he wouldn't be able to help the Blue Jays at third base, could certainly do so at second, which would allow them, the Blue Jays that is, to kind of grab or utilize a lot of their players already on the roster in a platoon type role at third base, where you have, you know, Biggio and Davis Schneider even, and maybe Espinal if he's still on the roster at that point. You know, look at Addison Barger, probably not Aurelvis Martinez. I think the door may be starting to shut, if it hasn't already, on his future at third base. You know, when you consider the fact that he's spent pretty much all of his time in winter ball this year at second base. He looked really good at second with Triple A Buffalo earlier this year too. So I think going forward, Martinez is more of a middle infielder rather than third base, even though, you know, I'm sure in a pinch, if you needed him to, he could go over there and be okay defensively at third base for you. But I don't think that's going to be a long-term role for Martinez. But you know, Damiano Paul Giamatti too is somebody that's, you know, given where his stock is at and how much he has excelled, or how much he did excel in 2023, that's somebody who's not on the 40-man roster yet, but could eventually, if he's still in the organization next season and not traded away, that the Blue Jays could eventually use in that spot at the hot corner if they don't acquire a full-time replacement for Matt Chapman. But sticking with the Brewers here, and this might be grasping at straws here, and it's more speculative than, you know, anything that's been put out there, but Christian Yelich might be somebody of interest for the Blue Jays, given the fact that they're looking for an outfielder this offseason. And, you know, the reason why I'm skeptical about the Brewers being interested in trading Yelich is just because of where the Brewers are at in their competitive window, where they don't seem interested and tearing things down and starting a rebuild just yet. I think that point is probably coming in the near future for them, mainly because Corbin Burns is nearing free agency. Willie Adames, we already outlined. They didn't bring back Brandon Woodruff, even though he's probably going to be out for all of next season. Devin Williams is only 1 year away from free agency, their all-star closer. You know, just like it seems like the door is closing on their time frame here, and like that's to be expected for a small market team like them. And you know, they've had a long run here, an extended run here of being a real contender in the NL Central. And you know, they do have some young prospects coming up, and some are already there. Sal Frelick, of note, had a really good rookie season with the Brewers last season. There are definitely more on the way. The Brewers system, prospect system, is very exciting, especially when you try and compare it to the Blue Jays. So Yelich, even though he's signed to a 9-year contract that runs through 2028, it has a mutual option attached to it for 2029. He could be somebody, like, at 31 years old, that the Brewers at least entertain the idea of potentially moving him, you know. Again, I still think it's probably unrealistic to think that they would move Yelich, because doing so would just kind of kickstart that rebuild. And, you know, they're not going to, I don't think the Brewers would want to retain too much money. I think the Brewers wouldn't want a team taking on too much money, because then that would limit their return. But they don't exactly have a ton of leverage in trade talks, even though Yelich had a pretty respectable bounce back 2023 season, where he was worth just above 4 wins above replacement level, and, you know, produced a 122 WRC plus over 144 games. Looked a lot more like the MVP version of Christian Yelich that we saw a few years ago. You know, when you look under the hood at his underlying metrics, I don't think we're going to see the same hitter that blasted 44 home runs and put up a 174 WRC plus in 2019 when he won the MVP. I think, for whatever reason, that 7-win version of Yelich is gone. You know, you look at his launch angle and how much it's changed, and how, you know, when you try and compare 2019 versus 2023, how Yelich just doesn't generate enough fly balls to be that same home run threat that he was all those years ago. You know, like last season, his ground ball rate was above 57%. In 2019, it was a shade over 43, right? And his launch angle, further to that point, was at 11.3 degrees on average in 2019. In 2023, it was at just 3.5 degrees. And it's been like that for the last 3 seasons. So whether it's something physical with Yelich or something else entirely, unless he's able to find that upper stroke again with his swing, he's really just going to hover around, you know, like that 15-20 home run potential. And for a team like the Blue Jays that really needs some more thump, even though Yelich generates a ton of hard contact and is, you know, a mediocre defender, like, he's not great, but he's not a liability either. Which is saying something for a guy at 31 years old. It wouldn't be a terrible option for the Blue Jays. Like, Yelich is a very disciplined hitter. He walks a lot, doesn't strike out a ton, hits for a lot of contact. That's more of his bread and butter now. But the Blue Jays already have a lot of hitters who have similar profiles like that. So I don't know how much Yelich would improve them. I don't think he would improve them all that much in the power department, especially when you consider the fact that he put up a 169 ISO in 2023, 130 the year before that, 125 the year before that one. So, you know, I do like Christian Yelich, but for the contract he's on, I think the Blue Jays can probably aim a little bit higher than Yelich, even though he would bring other sides to the equation other than his on-field value, right? Like, he's been around the game a long time. He's got postseason experience, former MVP. You know, that would certainly improve the Blue Jays' clubhouse culture. But again, like, Toronto's main priority is improving this team offensively, particularly in the power department. And because Christian Yelich is not that type of player anymore at this stage of his career, I don't think it's worth it going down that path with him. And I don't think the Brewers are ultimately open to that type of culture, franchise shift either. But I thought it'd be worth bringing up and just, you know, examining, because I've seen his name floated out there. And you know, with a left field spot open, you know, theoretically, Yelich could be a potential fit. But personally, I would probably steer clear of him for right now. But as we transition here, I do want to take a moment to pour one out for Ben Wagner, who I'm sure all of you saw on Wednesday was cut loose by Sportsnet. And unfairly, might I add, was let go. Not even contract renewed. And reportedly, no negotiations transpired between Rogers and Wagner's camp. And, you know, I completely understand the fact that the radio industry as a whole is a dying breed. That's the harsh reality of this business. However, all that being said, Ben Wagner is a pure professional in the fullest description. He did an unbelievable job for the Blue Jays and his work of covering them, despite all of the obstacles that he had to overcome in his six seasons at the helm. Right? You look at all the ridiculous hoops he had to jump through and the... you know, the unfair, the fact that Sportsnet unfairly kind of forced him to operate with one arm tied behind his back. Right? You had in 2020 where they got rid of radio broadcasts of Blue Jays games altogether, and they just simulcasted the TV broadcast on the radio, eliminating Wagner's job completely for part of that season. I think even all of that season, if I remember correctly. And then even after they brought him back, due to the restrictions with COVID, broadcasters weren't allowed to travel. But then when those restrictions were lifted, Sportsnet was too cheap to fly Ben out to call games on the road. They forced him to still be in the Toronto studio and call games over monitors. Again, limiting his capabilities to do his job effectively. And he still thrived despite all of those challenges. He was still by far among the best baseball broadcasters in the business. So I have no doubt that he will land on his feet somewhere else, and he will continue to do an incredible job, whether it's on the radio side or on the TV side, whatever he ends up choosing. But this is a clear and avoidable fumble from Sportsnet and Rodgers. And it's sad because, as somebody who is also in the journalism industry, I see this trend coming up a lot, where big publications like Sportsnet, they think it's fine and dandy to cut somebody loose to save some money and bring somebody in who has less experience, who they can pay less money to. Or they have a collection of less experienced broadcasters. They can rotate through the position and pay them less. That's not just limited to Sportsnet. Other companies do that too in North America. And that's more troubling to me than this recent incident involving Ben Wagner. Because again, I have no doubts he will find a new home and will thrive. But I think it's part of the bigger problem here with these companies that think they don't value loyalty or experience. Everything is about the bottom dollar. And it's especially true when you're owned by a telecommunications company like Sportsnet is, and also TSN, which is owned by Bell Media. So, here we are. Especially as Blue Jays fans, who I'm sure you don't want to hear about any of this, right? All of the behind-the-scenes nonsense, that doesn't matter to you. All you want to hear is your favorite voices calling your favorite team, right? Ben Wagner, ever since he took over for the legendary Jerry Howarth, has done an incredible job. And again, for the most part, has had to do it by himself with no regular co-host. Another one of the challenges he had to overcome while covering the Blue Jays for as long as he did. So, where does that leave us? I don't know. I wish I had a better answer, because frankly, it kind of pisses me off that this happened. Nothing I could have done about it. Nothing any of us could have done about it. But again, it gets back to the harsh reality that these companies think they're untouchable, and the only thing that matters is money, not quality. So, we'll see. Who Sportsnet finds to replace Ben Wagner could very well be Ben Schulman, Dan Schulman's son, which, sure, from a, you know, family storyline angle, that'd be awesome. That would be really special. But the fact that it had to come at the expense of Ben Wagner, that's not okay. So, I'll leave you with that, and we will reconvene probably next week at some point, because with the winter meeting starting on Monday, I'm sure there will be plenty of nuggets to discuss and break down that come out of there. So, you know, it won't be long before we pick things up again, but until that time comes, I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and now you're up to date. Thanks for listening.